As a band frontman and leader, Ronnie is probably regarded, along with Ozzy Osbourne, as one of the world's most successful. His band Elf supported Deep Purple on numerous tours, and when Matt Moore quit Deep Purple, it was the Elf band consisting of Craig Gruber, Mickey Lissole, Gary Driscoll and Ronnie who eventually formed Rainbow Art One, alongside Richie, that is, of course. Now, Ronnie left Rainbow in 1978 to replace Ozzy and Sabbath, with whom he recorded two studio albums and a double live album.
Hi, this is Ronnie James Dio, and I'm with Chris Tetley, and we're live at Donington, and we always will be.
Ronnie, the very first of my American guests, thank you very, very much indeed for the most entertaining set. I don't think I've ever known in my life a band to go on second at Donington and really steal the crowd like you did. You gave the pleasure.
Well, they gave me the pleasure. I mean, I really expected it was going to be that way because, I mean, I've played for these people, loyal people in the world to me always. I mean, they're the ones who have made this album successful. They're the ones who have made this show enjoyable for me because they are loyal and they're my friends. So, thank you for the compliment, but I think we should compliment the crowd, not me.
The album, of course, that we talk about is Holy Diver, which is Ronnie's first debut solo album, isn't it? Really?
Yes, it is.
Leaving the Samson and Rainbow.
That's right.
How have the sales gone? Any idea at all?
Yeah, they've gone very, very well, as a matter of fact. Very well, thank God for that.
I thought they might have done because
that was a Sabbath thing.
I thought they might have done somehow because a lot of the kids were singing to some of the numbers,
which is
very complimentary.
Yeah,
it's not been that long, has it?
It's not been out all that long, no. But again, these are people who are into what I do.
Yeah.
Nice, and you know, it's nice to see the mouths moving to the words. The only bad part is that when you forget the lyrics yourself and they say, well, you missed that one, didn't you? But no, it's great. It's done very well. The album's done very well all around the world. The nicest part is that not only has it been so well accepted by the people, but even critically, it has not really gotten one bad review that I've seen in all the world. And that's really incredible to me, really.
That is correct. That is correct. Of course, I think a lot of that must be surely contributed to the fact that not only were you with Black Sabbath, but
sure.
then you were with Richie.
Sure.
Those were great days.
Yes, they were.
And then, of course, before that, along with Mickey Lissell and the Electric Elves.
Yeah, Electric Elves and then Elves, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've really sort of...
Well, I've done my homework. Yeah. Paid my dues, done my homework. Yeah.
Yes, of course, yeah. And would you say that Sabbath or Rainbow have contributed to this album, Holy Diver?
Well, I think that in a general way you could probably say yes, but in retrospect I like to look at it this way. I think I did more for Rainbow and Black Sabbath than they did for me. I think once I stopped singing in Rainbow, I think you can hear the difference now. If all you have to do is put one of the pop records on, you've got it. And I think I helped resurrect Sabbath from the dead. I mean, they were a dead issue for two, perhaps three albums before I joined the band. And I think that the sound of my voice, the writing that I do, helped in great form to allow Sabbath to carry on the way they're carrying on now. So I like to think it was me who contributed to them and not them who contributed to me. But in retrospect again, Richie and I had a good run together. We complemented each other very, very well. And I think that my writing with Sabbath and the way they started finally to play as real musicians contributed to that success too. So it was one hand washes the other. I don't like to think that they made me what I am. I think we made each other what we are.
The band Dio as such will eventually play all your numbers, won't
they? That's right, it will.
Have you written all the numbers on Holy Diver?
Yes, I wrote two of the tracks solely alone. Mm-hmm. There's a single out at the moment, again, for whatever a single's worth, which is a track, Holy Diver, and a song called Evil Eyes, which I wrote both tracks of. But I've asked for a contribution from the other people as well. I think it's stupid if you've got contributors around you, creative people, not to say, hey, do you have anything? I mean, the thing in Rainbow was that Richie refused to let anyone but he and myself write anything. And I was Jimmy Bain, who was with me in that band, who had a lot to offer, was never given a chance to offer anything. Bob Daisley, who was the bass player in that band, who's written virtually all of Ozzy's material, who never got a chance to write anything. And I didn't want to fall into that trap. I wanted to use all of them who could create something for themselves and for me. And so we wrote the rest of the seven tracks together in different forms.
Very good. So I think we ought to give a band check, haven't we, really?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, sure. Yourself. You also play keyboards on this album, don't you?
Well, I dabble in keyboards, and Jimmy Bain, who's the bass player, dabbles in keyboards. Keith Emerson or John Lord or, you know, Don Airey or anyone with any kind of credentials as a keyboard player. But we did what we thought we had to do, which was to be rather basic and just give a nice little touch here and there. Jimmy Bain, I just mentioned, is the bass player.
And of course you worked with Jimmy before, didn't
Jimmy
you?
Jimmy and Rainbow, yeah. Jimmy was my best friend in Rainbow, and he's my best friend in this band, and he's a person I know who makes life happy for me. Vinny Appice's the drummer. Vinny played with me for the last 2 years of my tenure in Sabbath. Luckily, he didn't want to be in the band if I wasn't anymore, so he came with me. Great, because I think he's the best drummer in the world. Easily the American John Bonham.
He did a great solo, didn't he?
Well, and that wasn't even his kit, you see. If you'd seen his kit and he played his kit, you would have really heard his solo. But that'll come in October. And a guitar player, 21 years old, Vivian Campbell from Belfast, who's going to be a big, big, big star. He's a great player.
Okay, yeah, that's so someone from this side of the pond, then?
We got two from the side of the pond. You've got Jimmy and Viv.
Yes,
sure. This is an Anglo
relationship, Anglo-American. I love that.
Well, I think it works very
so
well.
So important.
Yeah, well, my attitude has always been, you know, very, very English anyway. The people I've always played with have been English. So that's my attitude. And I wanted a bass player and a guitar player who were British, because I think that's the only way that it works for me traditionally as a rock and roll player, to have people who go for it. And British players go for it. American players wimp about, and British players don't.
No, they go for the big things.
Yes, they do.
Just want to pick your brain, Ronnie, if I may, because you can help me here. What was Jimmy doing? You know, when Jimmy left Rainbow,
mm-hmm.
What was he doing then?
He formed his own band with Brian Robertson called Wild Horses.
Uh-huh.
And then Brian, of course, is now with Motorhead.
Motorhead.
And Jimmy, after that, dabbled with Thin Lizzy, with Phil Lynott for a long time. He wrote a few songs on Phil's solo and Soho album, and he toured with him as a quasi-bass keyboard player.
Really?
That's where we discovered Vivian Campbell from. They were touring Ireland, and Viv was in a band that opened for Lizzy called Sweet Savage, and he saw him, and when I asked for a guitar player, he mentioned Viv to me, heard the tape, brought him down, played in London, and he was the one.
I think they made a single, didn't they, actually? At
Sweet
one
Savage,
time.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yeah. It was quite good from memory,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Going back a little while.
Young band, you know, I mean, everyone has to learn. They did a good job of it, yeah.
Sure. So, you mentioned just a few moments ago, October. What are we going to do in October then?
October, we start the full-blown British tour, which will start, I believe the first day is in, I think it's Edinburgh, I think. And then we do the usual run down Edinburgh, Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham, so on, down to Southampton. And then we do the most stupid run I've ever heard in my life, Southampton to Glasgow. But you can't win them all.
Ronnie, how lovely.
And then we go to Europe. We do Germany, France, Scandinavian countries, Belgium, Holland, and then Japan, Australia, then another album. So it's all
gorgeous.
Pretty well mapped out.
Yeah. Do you ever see your cousin, David Feinstein?
No, I don't. No, I
don't. No, because I had a lovely chat with him last year, and he was such fun.
Don't see him at all, no. But he lives on the East Coast, I live on the West Coast. I've lived there for about 10 years, and I've not seen him at all, no.
Ah.
I've just seen his name in the press and see that he's in the band called The Rods. I think it is.
That's right, yeah, right on.
No, I don't. I really don't see him at all. He sends me messages once in a while saying, God, you're still the greatest singer in the world, and I reply to him saying, yes, you're right.
Despite what any press might say, actually, he had loads and loads of compliments about you. This is the point.
Sure he should.
Yeah, he's a good lad.
I made him what he is.
That's right.
He all without me, mate, what are you saying?
Ronnie, thank you very, very much indeed, and congratulations on today.
Thank you.
Is going to be absolutely colossal, man.
I'm just so
delighted. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the time. Thanks. Cheers.
Ronnie, a very big warm welcome to Great Britain. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, too.
Yeah, last time we met was at Castle Donington, sponsored
right.
Rock 1983, wasn't it?
Absolutely right. I didn't get to see one other act because I was stuck in that little caravan the whole time doing it.
Well, it wasn't that bad. It didn't hurt too much, did it?
It was fine. It was a pleasure.
It's not all been plain sailing, though, has it? Because there's been a lot of flack from the Sabbath boys, and then a lot of flack from the Rainbow boys, and yet you've kept soldiering on, thanks a lot to Wendy.
Most of it, of course, is personal. It's about that I don't mean that I'm not going to tell you about it. I mean, it's been directed to me as an individual, and nothing to do with the rest of the people in the band deal, which is good, because they really shouldn't have that great a part in mud being thrown at them. I think Vinny, perhaps, has had, in a few ways, pardon me, such as the credits on the album of Live Evil, has been castigated a little bit, but it's all been down to me, and that's okay. My feelings about it now are that, I think we've said enough Sabbath and their own point, really, or disproven their own point, whichever it may be. And I've just carried on with what I believe in, the music that I make and the people that I work with, and most importantly, the people that I play for, or the people who come into the halls.
What made you decide to leave Sabbath, though? You'd recorded the double live album, and in fact, you'd mixed most of it, hadn't you? And a superb album. It sold very well in Great Britain.
Mixed the way we always did. Mainly Tony and myself did. But at the end of the day, when the personal problems started to outweigh the fun of it all, then it was time for us to part company, and the mix was left to whoever did it at that point. I don't know who it was.
So, of course, you formed Dio. Let's give a name check to the band members.
On guitar, we have Vivian Campbell from Belfast. Bassist is Jimmy Bain from near Inverness Way in Scotland. Drummer Vinny Appice, who was with me in Sabbath for a while. And of course, Jimmy, who had played with me in Rainbow for 2 years. And me.
And of course, you've got a keyboard player as well, haven't you? That's
good. Well, he's there somewhere, yeah. Well, this is a four-piece band with a keyboard player. It's not a five-piece band. It's four with a keyboard player.
Yeah, nice one. So he plays off stage?
Yes, most of the time he does, unless there's an abundance of room, sometimes we'll give him a peek, maybe a left foot or something.
Great. So, of course, you'd formed Dio, and with the release of Holy Diver, you started touring. How extensively did you tour with Holy Diver?
Well, we've not been off the road any more than, I think, about 4 months, 5 months, perhaps, in the last 2.5 years. So we've worked very, very hard. We've had a very extensive touring schedule. We started in America. We did about 4 months in America. And then we did a European tour and then a British tour. And we went back and did another album straight away after that. Actually, I tell a lie. We went back to America and toured for another 3 months. Then we went into the studio and did The Last in Line.
Now, you've always been recognized as an artist who involves audience participation. You like to bring the kids in to your act because, of course, you obviously feel that the kids are a very important part of your act. When did this start? Did it start with Rainbow or maybe The Elf or what?
It's always been that way for me. I've always felt that I'm not something special. I try not to put myself or them special. I try not to put myself or the people I work with on a pedestal. We're being supportive all of the time. And I consider the audience that we play for to be not just the audience. I consider them to be part of the band. Dio has the musicians working on the stage, but the people who are in the audience are as much a part of the band. They are Dio as much as we are. As much as we're the audience, they're the band too. And I think with an attitude like that, if you work at it enough, they'll understand that you're really sincere about it. And I am sincere. And I've always done that. I've always tried to have them involved in everything that I've done, right down to on the Last in Line LP, there is a photo inside of kids holding up banners and all. And those are some of the members of our fan club, as a matter of fact, who we invited to do that. In fact, they're all members of our fan club. In one of the videos we did, which is for the title track, The Last in Line, we had a need for 50 or 60 extras. And so we contacted members of our fan club so that they could be involved yet again within the video. We did it in Los Angeles, and some came from as far away as Florida, from Minnesota, which is quite a ways from Los Angeles. And that was, to me, a reaffirmation of the idea of what I'm saying, that they care that much, that they want to be part of it all because we make them part of it.
Yeah, well, let's give a name check to the fan club then.
Niji Productions Incorporated, 18653 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 307, Tarzana, California. I must stop doing this. 91356. And then on the bottom it says special thanks.
Well,
we can thank our fan club.
Great, yeah, that's fantastic. Well, of course, join the Ronnie Dio fan club. Wines,
and that's enough for me. I don't really care much about, you know, we don't make any money from the fan club. What we try to do is offer something a little bit more special to people who are that involved, such as, which will probably go along to a question that you might be asking me during this, and that is, why are not the lyrics included on some of the LPs or all of the LPs? The reason is because we try to give that as a special treat to the people who join our fan club. We give them all the lyrics to all the songs, which no one else gets. We just try to give them a little bit more special treatment than anyone else.
How do you react in the studio? Are you bitchy or are you...
No,
or
not normally, not normally. I think you have to realize that it's a very trying time and you have to have a lot of patience. And I try to have as much patience as I possibly can, not only with myself, but with others around me. I'm notoriously an impatient person. Perhaps some of the reason for the slams that have been thrown at me, because I'm a perfectionist and I expect that people around me will give the 200% that I give. And when they don't, I feel that they failed. The people who work with me do give 200%, so I have no problem with that. Bitchiness is only, I guess it's only a matter of if you've had a good meal in the morning or if you have a stomach ache or if your foot hurts or something like that. But in the studio, no, I try to understand why I'm there, what my purpose is. And you don't get it done by screaming and yelling at people. You get it done by being creative, being personally compatible with each other. So I'm not bitchy in the studio at all. Maybe one or 2 days out of 2 months, but I try not to be.
That's great. Do you like studio work?
It's all right. I'm a performer. To
nice.
Me, the reason for doing the albums is so that I can take them and perform them live and make them better and expand them and give the players in the band and myself a chance to say more than we said with a limited time you have on an LP. I mean, we could take 10 years to make one LP if we wanted to, but at the end of the day, it's not really going to be rock and roll anymore, because rock and roll is a natural, very natural medium. And I try to present the LPs with as much naturalness as possible, therefore not taking too much time to do them. I mean, we take enough time, but not like some bands, 8 months, 9 months, a year to release an album. In some instances, that's good for those kind of bands, but not for us. We're a band that does the product so it allows us to go out and play for people and be better as live performers, because that is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah. Now, Kimo was telling me a little bit earlier about where you recorded the album and what a beautiful place it was in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Just describe some of the sort of scene out there, because I've never been to Colorado, I must confess.
Well, it's in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. The place we were at was about 9,000 feet above sea level. So it was very high and very difficult to sing there because of the lack of air. The air is very thin. It made it very difficult. The vocal instrument is like the reed of a saxophone or a clarinet, whereby air has to pass over the reed the same as it does over the vocal cords. And if you have a lack of air, then you're going to get a very thin sound, and it's going to be very difficult for you. And it was difficult for me there at that altitude, but we overcame. Again, it was about 45 minutes from anywhere. It was really in the middle of the wilderness. But the atmosphere, the people that we worked with there, the accommodations were absolutely magnificent. They were beautiful. They were so well renovated from the time that they were originally built, which was in 1840, 1850, when the gold mining and silver mining were the big industries at the time there. And it's just a setting that is very conducive to what I'm trying to get across on all the albums. That is no outside influences. There's not a chance to really go anywhere and have much of a rave up. You can't look forward to that every day, so you do your job. And that's really what recording is all about to me.
Great stuff. Do you like a drink yourself, Ronnie, or are you a fairly sort of what I call a clean living type man?
I like a drink very much. Yeah, we're notoriously hard drinkers in this band.
Good lad.
Yeah, that's, in fact, coming to Britain is always a big problem for us, because we end up going away weighing about, stone, at least a stone more, because of all the incredible beer here.
You like the British beer then, do you?
Oh yeah, I always have. Yeah.
Great.
Always
have, yeah. Well, it's great to see you again, and I hope we'll meet many more times, which we will do.
Of course we will.
No doubt. Good luck to the rest of the band. Good luck to you, Ronnie.
Thanks, Chris.
Pleasure to see you.
Thanks, mate.
Now I get this telephone call from Karen at Phonogram. Get your backside down to London smartish. Ronnie's flying in with a copy of his new album, and it's good, and he fancies a chat. How about it? You're going to be first in?
I'm first in, aren't I?
You are,
yeah,
first
again.
In. You are always first in.
Welcome back to England, Ronnie.
Thank
it's
you,
nice
Chris.
To see you.
And
smashing.
You too.
But let's just take up the conversation from a bit last time we were talking. We turned the old tape machine off and we started talking a bit informally about some things, but some things which are very significant to the music business. For instance, the Purple thing. All right, eventually now they did get together, they did record the album Perfect Strangers, and they've done a tour, needless to say, one date in England, which I strongly disapprove of. I mean, how do you sort of look upon that yourself?
Well, as I have said many times before, this was my favorite band. I mean, they were what I grew up on, what I really wanted to be, a band like that had the image of greatness. They were brilliant musicians, still are. I don't mean to be talking in the past so much as though they're dead, because they're not. But I'm talking about the era that I knew and love, especially Mach 2 and Mach 3. Mach 3 I thought was a better band, as it happens. I thought David and Glenn were a bit better than what had happened before with Ian, and this is not
Dave,
a slag.
David's got
Ian.
A great voice, hasn't he? Yes,
yeah, sure. Well, and let's face it, Glenn is one of the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But only because I think that they had matured a lot more by Mach 3. Not that the band before was any less talented, and not that Ian was not any less talented. That's not the case. But anyway, that legendary band went away, and went away with what I'd like to consider at least a bit of strength. They did strange things to each other and whatnot, but when they went away, I wasn't that disappointed. At least I had the legend to remember. And now they've come back again, and it pains me. I mean, I hope all the best for them. I wish them all the best, and they're doing very, very well, but I just would have preferred that they left it alone. I guess I'll quote Ozzy. They did it for the money, didn't they?
Well, it's true, too. It absolutely true. Yeah. And, same with the Black Sabbath thing, really. Yeah. I mean, all right, Ozzy's going to take part in this, and special thing for Ethiopia, which is a wonderful cause.
Of course.
I mean, I'm delighted, but I don't really think he wants to do it. Mind you, you were suggesting that maybe the old subs might get together. I don't think so.
Well, I don't like to be a predictor, because most of the time I'm right, so I don't like to say these things. Sorry about that. Anyway, I just feel that because of the way I see Ozzy talk now as compared to the way he talked before about Tony, about Geezer, about all the people in the band when he left, He seems to have mellowed now, but mellowed perhaps is the wrong word, a little bit more cautiously, because it looks as though, to me anyway, that this might be the beginning of another tour, much in the manner that Purple did. Let's face it, the rest of them are not exactly breaking down any walls with their careers. Ozzy's had a very difficult time of it lately, putting the band together again, rejuvenating what had been very successful with Bob Daisley in it, with Lee Kerslake, with Tommy Aldrich, etc., Don Airey, etc., etc., etc. So I think that Ozzy seems to be, in the interview anyway, to be rather cautious and wouldn't like to upset something that might be able to happen. He also said, we're only doing three songs, and it's only going to be 15 minutes, so what problem could we have? And then he said at the end of it, I wish we were doing more. Well, maybe that means he's got more of a taste for it. But whatever happens, that may be good for them. But Purple was a different situation.
No,
for me.
Sure.
Purple was
absolutely
a different situation.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I mean, Sabbath were a legend as well, but Purple were special to me. Very
yeah.
special.
And talking about Ethiopia, of course, you were mentioning on the lift just coming upstairs that you were doing something.
That's right. Let me tell you how it all
sure,
came about.
Yeah.
When we were all in Los Angeles, the radio station there, which is called KLOS, put on an affair called Rock Relief for Africa. It was a radiothon. It lasted for 2 days over the weekend, and they wanted some of the rock people in Los Angeles, who were not only the ones who lived there, but the ones who were passing through, to contribute some form of thing that could be auctioned to get some money for the aid of the Ethiopian situation. And Jimmy and Vivian were there at the time. I gave a gold record. Jimmy gave a bass. Vinny gave a set of drums. Vivian gave a guitar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We gave quite a deal of cash as well. And all the people who took part gave a lot. They really, really gave. And we raised, they wanted to raise $50,000. I believe it raised $250,000 over the 2 days. So it shows you the involvement that rock and roll people really had there. These were hard rock people, heavy rock people who were supposed to be nothing but idiots and non-caring devil worshippers, and still they were giving their time and their money. So when Vivian and Jimmy were there, they thought, well, heavy metal has not really done much of a contribution in the way of, well, giving a song. Why don't we do the same as everyone else has? I know it seems like jumping on the bandwagon, but at least they thought of it. So they carried it one step farther. They went to the people who put on USA for Africa, and they agreed to get involved, but they wanted someone with some more clout than Jimmy and Vivian, who they honestly didn't know who they were.
No.
I mean, I don't mean to say that as a slag either, but that was the case. So Jimmy and Vivian came and asked me, and I told them I really didn't want to be involved. We were in the middle of doing an album. I mean, I have enough on my plate as it is, I felt, with producing, writing, wiping behinds, and you know, blowing noses, to take the time out to do it. But they did ask me. They felt a great need for someone to help, and so I lent myself to it. So eventually, Jimmy and Vivian and I wrote the song. I produced all the people that did it. We asked guitar players and vocalists. This is something that you never ever will be able to hear, and that's on any other project. You have vocal heroes, guitar heroes. It's really quite unusual. The single will be about 3.5 minutes long. The track from the album of the same song will be about 7 minutes long. So there are a lot of guitar solos and some good vocal parts as well. The song is called Stars. Some of the vocalists included were myself, Jeff Tate from Queensryche, Don Dawkin from Dawkin, Eric Bloom from Blue Oyster Cult came in, Kevin DeBro from Quiet Riot, Rob Halford from Priest, I hope I don't forget anyone here, Paul Strotino from Rough Cut. We wanted to include a young personage as well.
Yeah, nice lad actually.
Yes, yeah, and a good singer too. Who on earth can I think of next? I know I've forgotten someone. I can see them singing in front of me, you know, while I'm saying, yes, very good. I'll think of the others in a moment. Guitar players, Neil Schon from Journey, Eric Bloom from Blue Oyster Cult, Buck Dahmer from Boys to Call, Eric was saying. Brad Gillis from Night Ranger, George Lynch from Dawkin, I mentioned Vivian, David and Adrian from Iron Maiden, Eddie Ojeda from Twisted Sister, Carlos Gavassa from Quiet Riot. If I've forgotten anyone, again, I think I've forgotten a vocalist somewhere, forgive me, but there were a lot. The chorus comprised of many, many people, some of the people from Motley Crue, Vinny's brother Carmine, the other members of Quiet Riot, the rest of the people in our band, Ted Nugent, the two guys from Spinal Tap. Oh, God, so many I can hardly even remember.
Massive.
A lot of people. Anyway, just in a nutshell to show you that there were a lot of people who were involved,
right.
A lot of people who cared. Once that's finished, I'll have to put it all together, and hopefully the release will be in September for the single, and an album much the way USA for Africa was done, unreleased tracks submitted by other artists who care. And let me just say one more thing, and then I'll stop being so long-winded. It was... At first, as I said, I didn't want to get involved because I felt I had too much on my own plate. Once I did get involved, of course, as usual, I never stopped being involved. And it was unbelievable. It was a labor of love. The people who were involved with it, especially guys like Rob Halford, were just unbelievable. The man has got the biggest heart I've ever seen. did a great job. They all sang and played so well. They all cared. They said they'd stay there forever until we needed them. They were beyond cooperative. They were magical. Just magical. And it taught me a little bit.
Right. So Wendy's coming up. I just imagine Wendy actually hindering all the shopkeepers. You're going to be stony broke by the time you finish.
Well, you see, Wendy's attitude is this. Because Wendy is British, she feels very, you know, badly about the economy. So she decides, you know, every two or three times a year to come over and help the economy by buying everything in sight. Yeah, that's it.
Great. She's still managing them.
Repcot are going to be opening for us on the American tour that we'll be doing. We had opportunities for others, but why not help those within your family as opposed to helping other people? We really don't need an opening act in America, except for a few places where we will bring in somebody with a bit more strength, perhaps the Garden in New York or something like that. But I doubt this band needs any kind of help like that. We proved it last time and the time before. But we'd like to be able to help Rough Cut. Their album was released and did fairly well for an opening album, and we hope that this will help it a little bit more. So they're doing fine, and they're going to be on the road with us. And Wendy's doing great. She's still deep in the throes of management between ourselves and Rough Cut and a few other things that she's attempting. I shouldn't mention this because maybe it won't happen, I don't know, but she's been speaking to Rudy Zarzo and Tommy Aldrich, who now have put something together.
That's right, yeah.
And Wendy's been dealing with that. Whether that comes to fruition or not is really more up to them and up to her. But it looks like it's going to happen. They seem to be very, very nice people, and they're very dedicated and devoted to what they're doing. So I hope so.
Excellent. The last time we actually met was up in Manchester at the Britannia Hotel, and that was on the Last in Line tour.
That's right.
Superb. And that was, of course, to cover that album. How did the tour go? Because we talked about the album then fairly extensively. How did the tour go then?
I thought the tour was great. I thought it went very well. It went very well in Britain, as it always does. It's not so much a matter of every seat being filled, which they almost were. There were a couple of places that we didn't fill all the seats. There were maybe three or four empty ones, so I wouldn't want to say, yes, a great sold-out tour that was magnificent. The point was that we played where we wanted to play. We played for all the people, as we always do. We went to places that bands like Purple have disavowed now. They've play a one-off and then go home and count their money, I guess. We try very desperately to go everywhere if we can. I know how important that is to the people in Britain. I know how difficult it is for them to go from place to place. So we did all that. It was very successful. We met a lot of great people along the way. It helped the LP a lot, of course. And it allowed us to do the next album.
Yeah, quite. I'm talking about the next album. It's called Sacred Heart.
Right.
There's some absolute corking tracks on. Let me just give you a quick rundown. It opens up with a live number, The King of Rock and Roll.
Well, that's a lie. We lied. It's not a lie.
I was going to ask you about that, actually. Well, it was very, very convincingly done.
Well,
I mean, how the heck do you manage to sing? I mean, it's a real rocker. I'm telling you, it's a rocker.
I'm very pleased with it.
Yeah.
What we did was, I felt that the song with as pretentious a title as King of Rock and Roll really needed to have some life behind it. So I wanted to put it in a live setting. Aside from that, I thought as a producer that it was very clever to do it that way. People would ask, where was that recording? And I think what really made it work was the little fiddly bits in the beginning, a little fiddly bit on the guitar and a little fiddly bit on the drums and then the scream or whatever, and then the band coming in. That, by the way, is one of our audiences from one of our shows. We didn't take any from a record. It is really one of our audiences. And there are parts in there that say, D-O, D-O, but we kind of left them away. But that was that song, and it's kind of the anthem that we usually start with, or at least the hard rock song we start with. I don't think this is the anthem that Stand Up and Shout or We Rock are, but it's in the same genre.
I do, actually. I was going to say, yes,
oh,
definitely.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks.
It would be nice.
I was
nice
worried about that.
No, it definitely is, Ronnie.
Because the song is not about one person in particular. To me, the song is about everybody, because I think everybody's the king of rock and roll, everyone who loves it. But it does have a lot of little parts. I did try to construct it with a lot of people in mind. Ozzy was one of them, as a matter of fact. And other people who I respect, Klaus Meine, David Coverdale, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they're all the king of rock and roll.
Correct.
But to my way of thinking, it's about people. It's about everybody out there.
And there are also another two more of my favorite numbers, Hungry for Heaven and Just Another Day.
Oh,
so you can tell
like
I'm going for the real up-tempo. But then again, we've got the Stompers, like Sacred Heart, and also a number that resembles Holy Diver, to my mind, quite a lot, just like the beat of a heart.
Yeah.
You do see the similarity
well,
in that
I see
yourself.
More of the similarity in like the beat of a heart to Eat Your Heart Out and Straight Through the Heart, another heart song. I see the beginning hung up on this. No, I see those to be more, that one to be more like the other two, like the beat of a heart, Straight Through the Heart. I'm getting myself all turned around and twisted here, but yeah, it has resemblance to Holy Diver as well, especially at the end where it goes out with a lot of low.
That's it.
The boys, as we call them, the monks.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the last album, The Last in Line, was actually recorded in Colorado.
Yes.
We were talking about this. You were having breathing problems, obviously, because, of course, the altitude, you know?
That's right.
So where was the new one recorded? I hasten to add, boys and girls, incidentally, that, I mean, it's only the 10th of July. The album's not going to be released until middle of August. And
yeah.
So...
12th of August, I think.
12th of August. I've only got a rough tape, so I don't know. You boys and girls know about as much as me.
Well, this is the order. This is exactly the order.
Yeah.
So they've done that right for you. I was going to tell you something else. Oh, that Caribou studio burned down.
Really?
Yes, it burned. They had heaters protecting the water pipes from freezing, and they caught the studio alight. And it started at the top, burned the top floor. The floor caved in. The pool table fell on the console. Then that floor burned. The console and the pool table fell downstairs to the rest of it, so it was completely gone. They did manage to save all the tapes, which is very nice.
Yeah.
At least they were very concerned about that. They saved it, but I understand he's not rebuilding the studio. This album was done in Los Angeles, Sacred Heart, at a studio called Rumbo. Rumbo is owned by, no one seems to know these people. I know you will because you know your music. two male and female married couple called the Captain and Tennille.
Yes.
Muskrat Love.
Yes. Yeah.
They own the studio. We hardly ever saw the Captain or Tennille, which was okay with me. The studio's great, a very nice studio outside, a little bit outside of L.A., so it wasn't quite so tempting, but we still were in L.A., and it had all the temptations that L.A. can give you, beautiful weather, beaches, and whatnot. I didn't want to do it there, but I couldn't find a proper studio in time, and I didn't want to delay the start of the album, so that's where it was done, in L.A.
And of course, as usual, all of your songs, you're capable of producing them on stage.
Absolutely.
That's most important, isn't it? I think this is something we discussed
it's
before.
It's the most important thing to me.
This means that also you can put it alongside some of your stuff that you did with Rainbow.
That's right.
And some of the stuff off Heaven and Hell and the Mob Rules.
That's right, which we'll continue to do.
Oh, you must do, yeah.
Not all of them. I mean, there comes a time when you have to divorce yourself from the past slightly. We'll just do them in a shorter variation.
Sure.
But we'll stay true to the past. I think that's important.
Yeah, sure. So, one question I've got to ask you is that, of course, you did Donington in 1983, which was a great... What are the chances of you doing Donington again?
I told you this before, Chris. We agreed to do Donington because we felt, for two reasons. One, management felt it was a good career move at the time. Secondly, I wanted to prove to British people and, of course, to Europeans who had come to the show that there really was a band called Dio, that it wasn't just Ronnie Dio's dabbling in a solo project. There actually was a great guitar player that I've been shouting about during the making of the album, who was going to be brilliant and going to be recognized as that, and I was right about that one too, and that's Vivian Campbell, and that, you know, that the band consisting of Vinnie, Jimmy, myself, and Vivian was there to stay, and it was going to stay. So that was important. I did not like the place that we were put on the show. All right, fair enough. Twisted Sister supposedly had a hit record before we did, 5 or 6 months before, and Meat Loaf sold 7 billion albums, and ZZ Top, of course, were on a roll, and Whitesnake were very big in this country. I still, to this day, think that was a load of codswallop, because I think that the legend that three of those people in the band at different points together had created, which was Sabbath, myself, and Vinny, with Tony and Geezer, of course, Rainbow, when Jimmy was a part of, and myself, who was part of both of them, of course, and this great young guitar player, and what I thought was an excellent album. I think that we were, you know, relegated to a position well beneath the status of the band.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, even though I agreed to do it and I didn't bitch and moan about it, we had to use hired gear. The audience, of course, was brilliant to us. They were great. They expected it. We expected it. I said after that, the next time we play Donington, if we don't headline it, I won't play it. And we were asked to play it this year with ZZ Top, and I refused. No, thank you. If we headline it, we'll do it. If we deserve to headline it, they'll ask us. If we don't, then perhaps they're right. But when the time comes that we can't headline it, we'll do it.
Yeah, do it.
The thing that bothers me the most is this, that we would have presented to them a show like they've never seen before. We would have brought our American stage set with us, and you would have seen things that only your mind could conceive. And I think that's what it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be great value for money. Those kids wait out there a long time. They spend a lot of money to get there. They spend a lot of time there. And I think they deserve, as a finale, to see something unbelievable. And that's what we would have given them. If ZZ Top can do that, more power to them. They certainly give them great music, great playing. But I think we could have added a little bit more. But I'm not, you know, crabbing about this year. I'm just saying that when the time comes that we headline it, we'll play it.
Yeah.
Until then, no.
So when do you anticipate coming over to Britain to play?
Oh,
I'm very lucky because we're sat here in Bartley Square. Can you hear the nightingale?
I was going to throw something at you. I think it'll be in the spring. It'll be springtime. And of course, the reason why we're not coming is we have the rest of the world to do too. We've done 2 years here. I desperately want to come back, and we desperately will come back. But we need to go to Japan and Australia and South America and Mexico because we are an international band. Those people need to see us too, and we need to see them. So we're just going to take a little bit of a hiatus here, but we'll be working in other places. That's why I'm here. And another thing, I've just had my appendix removed. It was only 10 days ago, and I've been on this lightning tour. I want you to know that I hope that proves how much you care about being here. I don't feel all that well, but I'm here to say, you know, thanks for the loyalty all the time. And, you know, we'll be here in the spring. And we do, we'll come with a different stage set, of course, one that'll be related to Sacred Heart. The one we're going to have in America is probably the biggest stage set anyone in the world has ever made. It'll be unbelievable, I tell you.
Great. Well, Ronnie, it's super to see you down here in London. I hope you know, get better.
Oh, and, I'll be okay.
And just hide Wendy's purse. That's the best bet. Wendy, nice to see you.
Thanks.
Bless your heart, mate.
Ronnie, not Wendy. Don't call me that. She's out shopping.
Cheers, mate.
All my best to Manchester, by the way.
Cheers.